Usually, when you look at a site plan for a multi-billion dollar commercial development, there is this expectation of just total logistical precision.
Oh, absolutely. Everything is perfectly mapped out.
Right. You see the engineering renderings, the sprawling concrete foundations, the supply chain nodes, and the developer points to that blueprint and just assumes the physical facility itself dictates the ultimate value of the project.
So that's how we've always underwritten these things, right? We scrutinize the square footage,
Yeah.
the power grid capacity, the material costs.
Exactly. We look at everything on the page. But if you step into the actual operational reality of building and running these modern facilities, a glaring blind spot emerges, and it's right in the middle of that pristine blueprint.
It really is. I mean, we are evaluating an infrastructure landscape right now where the single biggest point of failure isn't, the supply chain of concrete or steel.
No, it's the human element.
Yes. Specifically, where the thousands of people required to build, operationalize, and maintain these massive facilities are actually going to sleep.
Which is wild when you think about it. It is a critical bottleneck that standard commercial real estate modeling has just largely ignored until very recently.
Completely ignored.
And that blind spot is exactly what we are analyzing today. So, welcome. For you listening, this is a high-level, data-driven briefing focusing exclusively on the latest market intelligence from Pri's perspective, which is the newsletter authored by Priyanshu Akkakar.
And for those of you managing institutional capital, developing commercial real estate, or optimizing hotel portfolios, the thesis Pri is advancing here requires immediate attention.
It really does. We are dissecting a massive structural shift in the market as of early April 2026. The historical rigid lines between industrial development and hospitality assets are just entirely collapsing.
To understand the mechanics of this asset strategy, we really have to evaluate the macro trends driving domestic construction. Priyanshu's analysis centers on the rapid proliferation of what we call the Terafab model.
Right, these unprecedented large-scale gigafactories.
Exactly. We are tracking a historic influx of capital into highly specialized infrastructure. So, semiconductor plants, advanced battery manufacturing, critical aerospace logistics facilities.
And these are not standard warehouse builds.
Not at all. They require a staggering density of highly specialized rotational labor.
We are talking about thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of specialized workers just descending on secondary or tertiary markets.
Yeah, overnight, basically.
Right. And the fundamental friction point here is that local apartment inventory in these regions is entirely insufficient to absorb that kind of demographic shock.
You just cannot underwrite a Class A multifamily development based on rotational drilling crews or specialized welding teams who only need a 6 to 18 month billet.
It doesn't make sense. The credit profiles, the lease structures, and the sheer volume simply do not align with standard 12-month apartment leases.
They don't. And the traditional industrial developer playbook was always confined to just building the physical box.
Right.
Acquire the land, pour the foundation, erect the shell, secure the tenant.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because traditionally, industrial developers just focused on building the box. But as Pri points out, developers now have to think about the people inside the box and, more importantly, where they sleep.
That's the paradigm shift. Pri's data indicates that if there is no housing infrastructure, labor costs just skyrocket due to per diems and travel time. Or worse, the multi-billion dollar project simply stalls out.
Which is a nightmare for institutional investors.
Absolute nightmare. So industrial developers are now actively seeking out hospitality partners to provide turnkey managed housing solutions. In this new paradigm, hospitality is functioning as the ultimate industrial amenity.
So the sleep where you work trend is no longer a niche concept, it is an operational mandate.
Exactly. Hospitality isn't just for tourists anymore.
But let me challenge the fundamental premise of this infrastructure-led occupancy model for a second, because I am looking at the financial models pre-included in his latest newsletter.
Right, the master lease structures.
Yeah. He explicitly advocates for securing 12 to 24-month master leases with these corporate entities. Now, from a strict underwriting perspective, accepting those master leases means accepting a significantly lower average daily rate, or ADR.
It does. You take a hit on the nightly rate.
And traditional hospitality maximizes yield by riding those daily rate fluctuations, right? But capitalizing on peak demand.
Yeah.
Moving to a fixed lower rate feels like trading the upside of a strong market for just a stagnant baseline. Why would a yield-focused owner actively depress their own top-line revenue potential?
What's fascinating here is how Pri breaks down the bottom line logic. Because if you approach this using traditional hospitality metrics, it absolutely looks counterintuitive.
Right.
But the underlying logic in prize analysis relies on shifting the asset's behavior entirely.
Right.
I mean, think of traditional transient hospitality like day trading.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
You are fighting every single day for marginal gains, dealing with high volatility, and absorbing massive operational costs just to capture that daily spread.
Yeah, hoping it doesn't rain on a holiday weekend.
Exactly. But the workforce master lease model behaves much more like a treasury bond. You are sacrificing the volatile peak ADR for absolute guaranteed yield and a dramatically altered cost structure.
Mm.
The lower top-line rate is mathematically offset by the elimination of customer acquisition cost, or CAC.
Because the asset is essentially removed from the open retail market at that point.
Precisely.
When EOG Resources, or an aerospace contractor, signs a 24-month master lease for an entire wing of the property, your marketing budget basically drops to zero.
Zero heavy marketing.
You are no longer spending a fortune on digital ad spend or handing over 15 to 20% of your gross revenue in commissions to online travel agencies just to fight for highway traffic.
And zero OTA commissions completely changes the bottom line math. Furthermore, you strip out an immense amount of operational friction.
Because of the predictable occupancy.
Right. Predictable, guaranteed occupancy with a static guest list allows an operator to run incredibly lean staffing models. You do not need a fully staffed front desk managing hundreds of volatile check-ins, check-outs, and room assignments every single week.
So you are securing a recession-proof occupancy floor that turns a standard, unsexy economy asset into a highly stabilized cash flow engine.
That's the genius of it.
Well, the theoretical framework is sound, but institutional capital requires boots-on-the-ground proof. So let's stress test this strategy against a real-world asset that Pri is currently advising on.
The Ohio property.
Yeah, we are looking at the offering memorandum for the Super 8 by Wyndham in Newcomerstown, Ohio, positioned strategically as the Shale Gateway Lodge.
This specific asset perfectly isolates the variables of Pri's strategy. I mean, let's look at the acquisition basis first. It's a 60-key property priced at $1.3 million.
Here's where it gets really interesting. That translates to an entry point of just $21,000 per key.
Which is practically unheard of.
In the 2026 commercial construction environment, that is a structurally irreplaceable asset basis. You cannot acquire the land, run the utilities, pour the concrete, and build a new economy-scale hotel for anywhere near $21,000 a key.
Not a chance. You're essentially acquiring a cash-flowing asset at land and shell value.
But of course, the pricing only matters if the demand is durable.
Right. And Pri's boots-on-the-ground assessment identifies Newcomerstown not just as some random highway exit, but as a critical logistical hub driven by what he calls a tri-sector demand engine.
Which is a great way to frame it.
The macro geography is what makes this specific location so resilient. The first sector of that demand engine is energy, specifically the shale boom. EOG Resources recently executed a $5.6 billion acquisition of Encino Energy.
Wow.
Yeah. And when a capital injection of that magnitude hits neighboring Harrison and Guernsey counties, the drilling activity just scales exponentially. Thousands of roughnecks, pipeline inspectors, and rotational crews are flooding those fields.
And a $5.6 billion corporate initiative moves way faster than local municipalities can rezone and build housing.
Way faster. Those specific counties have virtually zero existing infrastructure to absorb that workforce. So Newcomerstown acts as the geographic bottleneck.
But let me push back on the risk profile here for a second. An economy asset in a secondary market is inherently vulnerable to single industry downturns. I mean, if natural gas prices plummet and EOG slows down their drilling schedule, what happens to this property? How resilient is a 60-key asset when the primary macro tailwind just dies down?
That is a fair question, and it is precisely why Priyanshu emphasizes the trisector demand model rather than relying on a single master lease.
Yeah.
If the energy sector retracts, the asset is insulated by the second sector, which is aerospace manufacturing.
Ah, right.
Simona Bolteron, a global leader in aircraft interior thermoplastics, is headquartered literally minutes away. That operational footprint requires a consistent, non-correlated flow of visiting technicians, corporate auditors, and specialized vendors who require medium-term lodging.
And they operate entirely independent of the energy market cycles.
Completely independent.
Okay. And the third layer of that safety net is regional infrastructure. I see in prize notes that the property is positioned to capture demand from ODOT and private construction crews working on major I-77 highway and utility overhauls.
Yes.
And these are projects funded by massive state and federal grants, meaning the capital is already locked in, regardless of broader economic fluctuations. And these crews mandate billeting for 6 to 18 month stretches.
So it's a multi-pronged safety net?
It is. But from a strict property management perspective, the logistics of this seem like an absolute nightmare.
Oh, if you run it like a standard hotel, yeah.
Right. I mean, logistically, how does one 60-key Super 8 cater to muddy roughnecks coming off a 12-hour drilling shift and white-collar aerospace safety inspectors requiring quiet workspaces and highway engineering crews at the exact same time without creating a chaotic guest experience?
Resolving that operational tension is the core of the strategy Pry is advising here. You just cannot run this property as the standard transient motel and expect to secure high-value corporate master leases.
You'd lose the contracts in a week.
Exactly. The thesis requires a physical and operational pivot into a highly structured B2B base camp. Pry's architecture for this transition relies on a hybrid inventory model.
Which is brilliant because most operators fail in the workforce housing sector because they treat their entire inventory as a monolith. They have one product. They can only successfully serve one demographic.
Right. But the structural layout of the newcomer's town asset allows it to be physically bifurcated. You create two completely isolated ecosystems under one roof. Let's break down the physical capex and layout of this hybrid model, starting with Zone A, what Pride designates as the field crew wing.
Okay, so Zone A leverages the exterior corridors of the property. The target demographic here is the heavy construction labor, the rig hands, the highway crews.
And the primary value proposition for this demographic is friction-free access. These crews need to pull heavy-duty utility trucks directly into the parking lot and access their rooms without hauling industrial gear through a pristine central lobby.
And the interior finish levels of Zone A have to be aggressively tailored to that use case. I mean, standard hotel carpeting is a massive liability here.
It would be ruined in a week.
Exactly. So you upgrade to highly durable LVP flooring, you install industrial mudroom entry mats, you outfit the rooms with premium blackout curtains because, you know, rotational field crews are frequently sleeping during daylight hours.
You're stripping out the fragile aesthetics of transient hospitality and optimizing purely for durability, acoustic isolation, and worker convenience.
Which is a stark contrast to Zone B, the engineer wing.
Totally different vibe. Zone B utilizes the interior corridors of the property. The demographic profile here is the site managers, the safety inspectors, the corporate aerospace vendors.
White-collar workers.
Exactly. These guests require a completely different operational environment. Zone B offers quiet, secure, climate-controlled access. The capital expenditures in this wing focus on high-grade carpeting, dedicated ergonomic workstations, and critical network infrastructure.
Like upgraded high-bandwidth Wi-Fi.
Yes, absolutely necessary for secure VPN access and remote administrative reporting.
So you are physically preventing the different labor demographics from interfering with one another. The roughneck dropping muddy boots outside an exterior door never even crosses paths with the aerospace auditor finalizing a compliance report on a secure Wi-Fi network.
And this hybrid approach perfectly aligns with the actionable advice Priyanshu provides to institutional developers. To de-risk these massive projects, developers must integrate early and secure turnkey managed solutions that keep their labor forces productive.
Because providing specialized demographic-specific housing ensures that productivity.
It also provides the asset owner with essential flexibility. The labor ratios of a multi-billion dollar project fluctuate constantly. During the initial groundwork phase, you have a massive influx of field crews.
Right.
As the facility transitions into operational testing, the field crews cycle out and the specialized engineers cycle in. The hybrid model allows the property to dynamically shift its inventory allocation without ever suffering a dip in overall occupancy.
So what does this all mean? The operational theory is compelling, but let's look at the pro forma financial projections. Let's do the napkin math on how this physical pivot actually translates to institutional yield.
The numbers are staggering.
They really are. If we analyze the baseline, operating this property as a standard economy transient motel, we're looking at a volatile 50% occupancy rate. At an average daily rate of $60, the property generates approximately $650,000 in gross annual revenue.
But when you apply Pry's stabilized workforce model, the financial profile is completely rewritten. The master leases drive the stabilized occupancy up to 85%.
even though you drop the ADR significantly to $45 a night.
Right, which gives those corporate entities a highly competitive billing rate of just $315 a week per worker. But despite that aggressive rate reduction, the guaranteed volume pushes the gross revenue from $650,000 up to over $830,000.
But the gross revenue bump is just surface-level data. The actual institutional value and the competitive moat Preez analysis uncovers is found in the net operating income margin.
The NOI is where the strategy shines.
Yeah. By pivoting to this B2B Basecamp model, the NOI margin scales from a sluggish 25% under the transient model to an exceptional 45% under the workforce model.
That is a staggering jump in profitability.
It is. To nearly double a margin in the hospitality sector requires aggressively stripping out systemic costs. So let's look closely at the operational efficiencies driving that 45% margin. The biggest line item in hospitality is labor, specifically housekeeping.
Exactly. When you shift from daily transient room turns to long-term master leases, you transition to weekly housekeeping schedules.
Oh, wow. So you are effectively slashing your housekeeping labor hours by roughly 40%.
Yes. In a macroeconomic environment where hospitality labor is both scarce and increasingly expensive, mitigating your reliance on hourly headcount is a massive strategic advantage.
And we have to factor in the payment mechanics, too. Transient motels rely on individual retail credit card swipes at the front desk. That exposes the operator to continuous merchant processing fees and significant administrative overhead.
But the B2B model utilizes direct corporate billing.
Right. You execute master leases with EOG resources or ODOT contractors, and you are invoicing massive corporate entities directly. You eliminate the retail processing fees, reduce the accounting friction, and completely bypass the need for a heavily staffed reception desk.
You combine those operational savings with the total elimination of the 15% OTA commission bleed, and the 45% NOI margin becomes not just achievable, but highly defensible.
Very defensible.
But the ultimate defensive mechanism, the reason this specific strategy is so attractive to institutional capital circles, back to the $21,000 per key acquisition basis we discussed earlier.
Because the barrier to entry for competitors is just insurmountable at that price point. If an institutional developer attempts to enter the newcomer's town market tomorrow to capture this exact tri-sector demand, they are subject to 2026 construction costs.
They are starting from scratch.
Right. They have to acquire land, manage supply chain delays, and build from the ground up at an entry point of $100,000 to $150,000 per key.
At that elevated capital basis, the new developer is mathematically forced to charge $120 a night just to service their commercial debt and break even.
They cannot compete. An operator executing Preez strategy sitting on a $21,000 per key basis can profitably offer long-term corporate rates of $40 to $50 a night.
You completely undercut any new development while maintaining a 45% margin.
And you add in the geographic advantage of being the very first highway exit north of the drilling fields, which saves crews an hour of round-trip commute time compared to hotels further north, and you effectively monopolize the local demand.
It is a phenomenal case study in tactical asset repositioning. You identify an undervalued, mispriced asset. You recognize a massive macroeconomic tailwind in the form of gigafactory and infrastructure spending.
Yeah.
You execute a highly specific demographic targeted physical pivot to eliminate guest friction, and you lock in long-term corporate master leases that act more like commercial real estate debt than volatile hospitality income.
Which reinforces exactly why Priyanshu Adithakar's methodology is gaining so much traction right now. Navigating this transition requires an advisor who isn't just looking at standard hospitality comps.
It requires someone who deeply understands how the microgeography of a secondary market intersects with the macroeconomics of heavy industrial development.
Exactly. Preez's perspective proves that the data exists to de-risk these investments, provided you know exactly which metrics to isolate and restructure.
Yeah. And that brings us to the core takeaway for you as an investor or developer. The definition of commercial infrastructure has permanently expanded.
It has. The future of industrial growth cannot be modeled simply by calculating the cost of the facility itself. If you want to secure the multi-billion dollar asset, you have to control the ecosystem around it. You have to control where the labor force sleeps, how they commute, and the quality of their downtime.
The physical box is basically useless without the human capital required to run it.
Precisely.
This raises an important question, though, for anyone managing long-term capital allocation. If heavy industry and energy sectors are already successfully transforming economy motels into localized, highly profitable company towns to solve their acute labor housing crises today.
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
Well, we have to look at the broader corporate landscape.
Yeah.
How long until the major tech giants, facing their own geographic labor challenges, start quietly acquiring mid-scale hotels?
Right.
Imagine Silicon Valley Capital buying up hospitality portfolios in secondary markets to permanently house their remote or hybrid workforces in branded corporate-controlled environments.
That is a fascinating and critical thought to end on, because when you look back at that initial blueprint, that rendering of the concrete foundation and the steel beams, if you are only looking at the facility itself, you are entirely missing the underlying investment opportunity. You have to follow the people.